Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. The time is 1:32 p.m. We are in Belch Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city, Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Members Merrick, Senator Merrick, and Senator Bishop are away in finance. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LAO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. Today we have three items on our agenda, and we will try to keep everyone kind of in the confines of the half an hour for each bill so we can move expeditiously through today's hearing and no one gets left out. First up is going to be Senate Bill 234, extending the Marijuana Control Board. Next will be Senate Bill 146, gaming electronic poll tabs, followed by Senate Bill 219, prior authorization exempt for health providers. First up, Senate Bill 234. We first heard this bill on March 8th when we had a presentation on the bill and heard testimony from legislative auditor Chris Curtis. Alcohol and Marijuana Control Officer Joan Wilson and the Chair of the Marijuana Control Board, Bruce Schulte. For a brief recap of the bill, we have my staff, Conrad Jackson, here with us. Mr. Jackson, welcome, as always, to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the committee. As members will recall, we last heard this bill last Friday. It's a short bill, as most all of the board extensions are. We're proposing to extend the Marijuana Control Board by 3 years. There were a couple of issues that were noted in the legislative audit, as explained by Ms. Chris Curtis. Those were also addressed by Chair Schulte and Director Wilson. As you noted, again, they are either online or in the room and available to respond to questions and anything else that the board needs or the members need.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, during our hearing on the 8th of this month, members asked for more details on the issue of board vacancies. Director Wilson provided those in writing, but I'm wondering if she would be interested in putting herself on the record to address those via the Teams Hub as well. Director Wilson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here to report on the two vacancies, since the other three positions, I believe, are fully well staffed. As to the public health seat, that position was vacant between February 28th, 2021, until August 19th, 2021. The rural seat was vacant from The rural seat was vacant from May 2021 until January 2022.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there further? Anything further?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Further, are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, we also have our legislative auditor, Chris Curtis, available for questions if anyone would like to ask our most excellent auditor any questions on this bill. Now would be a good time. Seeing none, at this time I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 234. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify to this piece of legislation? Seeing no one, we will look online where we find one person who wishes to testify. Bailey Stewart, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Bailey Stewart. I speak on behalf of Stewart Consulting. Good afternoon, Chair Bjorkman and Senate Labor and Commerce Committee members. I am the owner of Green Jar Cannabis Retail, the first retail to open in the Mat-Su Valley. I'm an adjunct professor at UAA, educating students on the subject of cannabis science regulations. I serve on the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association as the chair of the Public Relations and Governance Committee, and I'm the governor's appointee to the Marijuana Control Board's industry seat. I come to you today in support of Senate Bill 234. Given my time in the cannabis industry, I understand the work that still needs to be done to Title III. Currently, as you know from the Sunset Audit Report on AMCO, there is a new state licensing system that is being developed for the cannabis industry to streamline renewals and applications. Currently, this is all done through paper and Excel. The office needs time to develop and implement the system for the future. I do support the three-year extension to be in line with the alcohol sunset so that in the future, the next review can be streamlined for DCCED. Most importantly, though, is that if the Marijuana Control Board sunsets, the AMCO office will no longer have the authority to operate the marijuana licensing program and will no longer collect licensing fees associated with that program. Additionally, there is still work to be done with licensing. This year marks the 10-year anniversary of legalization. When the board was first implemented, there were concerns that if the state did not implement stringent regulations, that the federal government was going to intervene and potentially arrest the regulation makers. While this fear was unfounded, the regulations that were created with this in mind overregulated our industry. This last year, the board did a fantastic job at identifying regulations that did not serve the purpose of protecting public health or safety, and took the time to either remove or transition regulatory language that promoted commerce within our industry and helped minimize producing less needless waste. Additionally, we had the issues of intoxicating hemp. The governor's task force made the recommendation that we create a one-plant system. As many of you know, hemp and marijuana are the same plant, hemp being defined as having little to no THC. However, chemistry has gotten ahead of regulations, and a process has been discovered that transitions CBD into THC. There are products being sold as hemp throughout the state with no age gating that contain intoxicating levels of THC that were derived from hemp and never saw testing or true regulatory oversight with public health and safety in mind. With all that said, there's still work to be done by the Marijuana Control Board, and I ask that you support Senate Bill 234 in extending the Marijuana Control Board so that we can truly finish the work that was started. We are anticipating federal legalization in coming years, and with that comes regulations that protect Alaskan businesses while ensuring the safety of products that will be imported into the state. While these conversations have begun, the state of Alaska is not prepared for importation of cannabis in the state currently. There are discussions that still need to be had. The governor task force has given some great feedback on what the board needs to consider in order to be prepared for federal legalization. But this will take having a working board to hold the conversations and implement these regulations in the future. Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and Senate Labor and Commerce Committee members for hearing my public comment. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. Are there questions from members of the committee? Thank you again for your testimony. Is there anyone else online or in the room who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 234? Seeing no one, at this time I will close public testimony. Is there further committee discussion? Seeing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 234, version 33-LS1358/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 234 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. back on the record, 1:42 p.m., same spot, Belts Room 105. We'll now take up the next bill on our agenda. It's Senate Bill 146, Gaming and Electronic Poll Tabs. To present the bill, we have Commissioner Adam Crum from the Department of Revenue and Brandon Spanos, Acting Director of the Tax Division from the Department of Revenue. Gentlemen, please come to the table. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation as soon as you feel comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Adam Crum, Commissioner of Revenue for the State of Alaska. I appreciate the committee for hearing Senate Bill 146, which is an update to the electronic poll tabs gaming. This is a bill that will see a great deal of benefit. It helps the charities that are one of the primary beneficiaries of this because it removes certain items like caps. It also allows access to a different form of gaming type that we've seen in other states has actually just led to increased revenues across the board to all parties. So meaning some more dollars to the operators, vendors, as well as to our charities. So this is an item that we look forward to discussing and really do appreciate the committee taking the time to hear this bill. The primary presentation is going to be done by Brandon Spanos, the acting director of the tax division. And we do have online the charitable gaming section manager as well. And with the chair's permission, I'll step back and let him take point.
Thank you, Commissioner. Spanos.
Thank you. For the record, acting tax director, Brandon Spanos. And as the commissioner said, I'll be doing the presentation on the introduction for Senate Bill HB 146. So this bill adds a new gaming type to the charitable gaming structure. I want to give a brief overview of what that is in the tax division. The charitable gaming program, it issues, I'm going to back up just 1 minute. The mission of the tax division, I wanted to mention, is to collect taxes. That kind of makes sense. Inform stakeholders, mainly through our RSB and other reports, and to regulate charitable gaming. So that last section of our mission is unique within the tax division in that we regulate the entire gaming structure. So as you just heard, your last bill here in this committee was on the Marijuana Control Board. The tax division collects the marijuana tax, but the Marijuana Control Board regulates the industry. Within the tax division for gaming, we collect the tax and we regulate the industry. The municipalities and qualified nonprofit organizations are eligible to conduct gaming activities and set out in the Alaska Gaming Reform Act. The purpose of these activities is to provide public benefit in the form of money and money to those nonprofit entities. There is a broad range of qualifying organizations, which you can read here on this slide. And in addition to regulating poll tabs, the charitable gaming group also regulates bingo and raffles. So now moving to slide 3, the charitable gaming program issues permits and licenses to conduct gaming activities, collect fees and taxes, and conduct audits and investigates complaints from the public and other permittees. Permits are issued annually, and the fees range from $20 to $100. Licenses are issued annual with fees ranging from $500 to $2,500. There's a 3% tax on pull tabs sold by the distributors. It's collected on a monthly basis, and there's a 1% fee on the net proceeds, and that's collected on an annual basis from permittees if those gross receipts are greater than $20,000 or equal to $20,000. There are monthly, quarterly, and annual returns filed by the permittees and licensees conducting gaming activities depending on the amount of gross receipts and the type of the permit or license that they hold. Manufacturers and distributors file monthly reports. Operators must file monthly reports to the permittees, but not to the tax division. Permit and license fees, poll tab taxes, and net proceed fees are deposited into the general fund. And the amounts for those in the last 4 years are listed on this slide. Each of those, again, going into the general fund. The next slide simply shows the number of permittees, operators, multiple beneficiaries, distributors, and manufacturers that report to us, and also the number of reports. So For instance, there on this slide, you'll see the number of permittees in 2023 was 1,045, and we received 3,344 reports from those 1,045 permittees. The next slide goes over some history of the gaming within Alaska. So the legislature allowed gaming to begin in 1960. It was put into DOR in 1984, and in 1988, through regulation, in 1960 it was put in DOR. In 1984 is when, through regulation, DOR authorized pull tabs, and then in 1988 the legislature put that in statute. It moved out, the gaming moved out of Department of Revenue for a period of time. In 1989, it went to Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and then in 1993 came back to DOR with some additional changes that you can see here on this slide. Now on to the bill for SB 146. The bill allows pull tab games to be expanded from the traditional pull tab, which you may be familiar with, which is a paper card. You pull off a part of that card to reveal symbols or pictures, and you try to get certain combinations in order to win and get a prize. And this would expand that to electronic version, which is more like a device that you would do a similar activity where you would try to reveal a certain combination of pictures or images to get a prize. The bill also increases the prize limits. It moves per operator a maximum of $500,000 in prizes each year to a maximum of $2 million in prizes each year for electronic pull tab activities, and a maximum of $1 million in prizes each year for other gaming activities. And then it provides unique limitations for electronic pull tab systems, which are on this slide. I won't read each of them. And then there is no limit for the number of electronic pull tab devices per permittee. So now I'm on slide 7. And this answers the question of what is the estimated revenue impact. Our analysis in DOR indicates that that expanding gaming to the what I'm going to call, I'll refer to it as e-tabs, but electronic pull tabs, would generate additional positive revenue. We used basically five other states that already have implemented electronic pull tabs to determine what that range could be, and have that data available. We prepared this a scenario and have pull tab of how pull tab sales will increase with e-tabs in Alaska. Using an average of the other five states, we estimate $1 million of additional state revenue in the first full year of implementation, which would be FY26, and that increases to $3 million by FY30. We assume no impacts in FY25 due to a year-long implementation process. The estimated revenue is one option in a wide range of uncertainty. We have provided a high and a low case for our analysis, which demonstrates the possible range of outcomes. Those are also on that same slide 7 there. So moving to slide 8, our charitable gaming group is very small. It consists right now of only 3 people, or rather 3 positions. We have only one person that's currently employed in that group, and so it is a very big lift for that one person, or even when it's filled with all 3 positions, to regulate the entire industry. And this bill would create an added burden on the group and basically be a straw that could break the camel's back. So we are suggesting adding 2 positions in order to support the additional gaming activities. And additionally, the legislation would require the department to make changes to its tax revenue management system and an accompanying revenue online where permittees can go in and file, not only for licenses, but file their tax returns. Resources required to implement the bill would be those 2 positions, and then everything else would be absorbed by the division as far as programming goes. And slide 8 was concluded the overview. Chair, would you like me to read through the sectional analysis? Okay. So the rest of the slides are the sectional analysis, and that concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spanos. Are there any questions for the director? Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. So I have two questions, and the first one is, does the increase in prize limits increase state revenue?
Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair, the increase in prize limits could increase state revenue through increased gaming activity. So each operator would be able to potentially have more gaming activity because they can have higher prizes.
Thank you. May I ask another question, Mr.
Yes, ma'am.
Chairman? Thank you. And so my next question is, because I thought I heard you say that ETABs would increase state revenue. So I'd like to know, how does having an ETAB increase state revenue? Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair, it's a good question. Our analysis indicates that the other states that implemented ETABs saw more state revenue, and our conclusion is that it's likely through targeting, or not targeting, but that there's other population that isn't interested in the paper version of of the poll tab that does participate in the ETAB. And I believe you have an invited testimony today from Arrow. I heard them give a presentation in the other body, and they mentioned that it's a younger generation that is looking at that, although that younger generation is still adult age.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Acting Director Spanos. So as the bill sits currently, it's imagined that this would increase state revenue by about $1 million. Imagined isn't the right word. Forecast. Is that correct?
Chair Bjorkman, that's correct. That's our average, kind of our safe assessment, that it would be average $1 million in the first year.
How many additional dollars would Alaskans have to gamble in order to create that additional $1 million in revenue for the state?
Chair Bjorkman, I'd have to get back to you. I hate to do math on the spot in my head, but it's the poll tab, I believe, is a 3%, but there may be other fees and costs in there. I'd want to double check my math. But obviously, they would have to have an increase in gaming activity to generate additional revenue.
Great. And is the additional revenue generated to the state, is that proportional to the amount of revenue that would be generated to charities? Would they see a proportional increase in revenue, the charities?
Chair Bjorkman, yes. The charities would have increased revenue as well.
Would it be the same proportion?
Proportionate. Because Chair Bjorkman, because the state's take is a percentage except for the flat permits and fees, then it would be very proportionate. Yes.
Right. So according to the Department of Revenue, let's just say if we set up a ratio and the increase in gameplay was, let's say, 4x. Okay. So if the department got a 4x increase in revenue, charities would also get a 4x increase.
Chair Bjorkman, it would maybe not be exactly the same 4x, but it would be very close. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what percentage do charities receive?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, if I could call on my lifeline, who's here in the room, as I mentioned, we have a staff of one right now. If I could call that subject matter expert up to answer.
That would be fine, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hello, ma'am.
Hi. Yeah.
Please state your name for the record. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Martha Abel. I am the gaming manager for the Charitable Gaming Section, Department of Revenue.
Excellent.
And I actually could not hear the question from the back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll repeat it. Thank you for being here. What percentage do charities receive from gaming?
Through the chair, the nonprofits, we call them permittees, they receive 100% of net proceeds from gaming. They receive the net from gaming. Percentage-wise, I'd have to think about that because they receive the net proceeds, but the gross receipts come in, and then from there, there's expenses. There's cost of prizes, and then there's gaming-related expenses, and certain licensees, such as operators, one of the expenses they're allowed is their fee. So that's another expense that goes out after expenses and prizes. Another expense is cost of games. After that, that's the net proceeds. And that's the part that the permittees receive from gross receipts. I'm trying to think if I could take a stab at percentage of like gross receipts, like the original amount that the sales come in. And off the top of my head, I really cannot. I've never really thought about the percent compared to gross receipts.
If I can follow up.
I could get back to you on that.
That's fine. I just kind of wanted to know what they get. And I think what you just told me is clear. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you. And the committee would be very interested to know, for every dollar spent on a RIPI, how many cents are going to the charity? For every dollar that someone pays out for a RIPI.
Okay, I can get back to you on that.
Yeah. Further questions? Okay. Martha, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Anything further from Acting Director Spanos?
Chair Bjorkman, no, we don't have anything further. Thanks for having us and listening to our presentation.
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have Mary Magnuson. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Magnuson, and I'm here today to talk to you about Senate Bill 146 and express our support for the bill. By way of background, I want to just give a little background on myself as well as on the company I represent, Arrow International. I've been in the gambling business. I've been a gambling attorney for over 30 years. And in that role, I've worked in pretty much every state that has had charity gaming enacted. And I've worked on legislation. I've worked on regulations. I've worked on policy. And so my experience really, what I bring to the table, I guess, is experience from what other states have done. And how that can be helpful in analyzing these issues as a policy matter for the state of Alaska. Arrow is a company that's been in business since 1967. It's located in Cleveland, Ohio. It's managed by the Gallagher family. Now the third generation is the chief operating officer. The core business for Arrow is actually paper pull tabs and bingo paper. And they've been servicing Alaska charities since about 1984 when pull tabs were legalized by regulation by the Department of Revenue. Electronic pull tabs is sort of a new evolution for Arrow. It's something that they've recently gotten into, and it's just a modernization of the existing paper pull tab game. The electronic games are designed just like the paper games. Many of the electronic games are named just like the paper games. They play very similarly. The electronic games have, like a paper box, a set number of tickets, a predefined winning percentage for the player, and an ideal net or an ideal profit that goes to the charity. Every game is designed so that the charity will make a profit. It's the same in paper. It's the same in the electronic pull tabs, simply how they're designed. There's been some conversation about Arrow being sort of the big bad bully coming into the state trying to create a monopoly here. And I just want to set the record straight that that's definitely not the case. Arrow did acquire a distributor in Alaska recently called Whaler Casino Supply. It was not to create a monopoly, but it was basically to just expand a corporate business idea of having more distribution outlets for their product. But in Alaska, it's possible under the current law, and has been since the very, very beginnings, for a manufacturer to also hold a distributor license. So Arrow would not have had to purchase a distributor in Alaska. They simply could have gone directly to the market as a distributor, but instead chose to invest in Alaska by acquiring the assets of the Whaler. And what that's done is it's taken the small business and allowed it to grow. The employees now have a state of the art medical plan. They have profit sharing, and they also have a 401k plan, things that benefited the employees of the company, and the employees, and hopefully the employees will grow, the number of employees will grow, thereby providing some more Alaska jobs. So I want to give you a little bit about electronics. As I said, they're a paper game in an electronic format. You can see on the screen, Bananas is a very popular game. It's a paper game. Bananas is also available in the electronic format. They play almost identically. There really is not much difference. The paper game comes in a dollar ticket. It comes in maybe a 50-cent ticket, may come in a $2 ticket. You could have the same thing on the electronics. You could have a 50-cent ticket, a dollar ticket, $2 ticket, which is the maximum in Alaska. There's also been some conversation about the paybacks or how much goes back in the form of prizes. In a paper game, the average in Alaska is around 82%, which means the charity holds roughly 18%. Electronic games tend to run a little bit higher, and we found that in those games, 90% is really kind of a sweet spot where the charities really do very, very well. But there's been some concerns raised here that 90% doesn't leave enough money left over for the charity. It leaves only 10% because 90% of the amount wagered is going back to the players. But just like paper games, the electronic games can come in different paybacks. You could have an 85% game. You could have an 82% game. You know, whatever the market wants can be developed because the games really function and can function like the paper games. So there's no need to fear that every game will come out at 90%. Or above. Those games are likely to meet what the market wants, and if the market wants lesser payback to the players, then that's what the market can have. The electronic games also have multiple games on each device, so instead of having a number of boxes in any certain establishment, each with individual games in them, you can have a number of individual games, maybe 10 different games or so, on each of these devices. And the devices come in sort of a standalone cabinet format, and then they also come in a small tablet format for those places that just don't have room for the cabinets or who just prefer to work off of the smaller tablet. And the bill before you would allow either kind, and we think that the cabinets will be fine in a lot of places like veterans and fraternal halls where they have more space. The tablets themselves might be better off in rural Alaska because they're very easy to, they're much easier to service. If a tablet, something goes wrong with the tablet, it's easy to send one back out there. It's a lot more difficult to go out and service the cabinets. So they require standard Wi-Fi and standard internet, nothing special. They don't have to have any, VPNs or any kind of dedicated lines, just whatever the facility has will work. The games are updated regularly, so new games come out just like new paper games come out. And they will come out on a regular basis, sometimes monthly, for the entertainment of the players. And the machines provide a very robust back-end reporting system so that every dollar put into the machine and every prize won is recorded. The charities will have a POS system where they can then run reports so that instead of counting tickets and manually filling out forms and sending them into the Department of Revenue, they can simply run reports that will track every dollar in and every dollar out so that they can match up their cash drawers, you know, at the end of every night. If there's something missing, they will know exactly that it's missing. They'll know exactly how much. And then they can file the reports directly with the Department of Revenue. They can be printed or they could be filed electronically. And the reports can be configured to whatever the revenue department wants to receive. The Department of Revenue then also has its own access into the system. So if they want to go in and retrieve information from just a basic computer in their office, they have a portal. They don't need any additional equipment. We'll give them access through a portal, and they can go into the portal, and they can pull reports if they would like. If they want to look at a particular site because they're concerned something's going on, they can go directly to the site, or they can pull large volumes of information from a statewide basis to see what's happening. The benefits of electronic pull tabs are really quite substantial. We have found in other states, and these are legal in 10 states now for charity purposes, that charities make more money. I can't predict the future, and I can't say that in Alaska charities will make X more dollars. But I can say that we do have evidence based on state data generated by these other states that in each and every state, the charities have made more money. The average, if you take them all together, is about 74% increase in net revenue, which is wagers less prizes. About 74%, that's on the average. Some have been higher, some have been lower, but that's the average across the board. The games do tend to attract new players. I'm not talking kids. I'm talking people who might just find it fun to play on the electronic format because they like playing, games on electronics. There's a whole generation that has grown up now playing, computer games. They like them. And they become attracted to the electronic versions because it's something new and it's something different. But we're not talking about 20-year-olds. You know, we're talking about people who are in their 40s, 50s. And the games are geared toward that age group. So, you know, some of our games are Cheers. We have a couple new games coming out, Elvis, Monopoly. You can see the demographic that it kind of, you know, goes to. It's not, we're not talking about, any games that would be attractive to younger generations. And what we've also noticed is for veteran and fraternal clubs, there's been an increase in membership. These clubs are challenged now. I mean, they're losing members, and some of them are hard-pressed to, you know, keep the doors open. And having these electronic games has caused people to come in and find out that, you know, these places aren't exactly what I thought. They're more fun. There's just not a bunch of old guys sitting around drinking. It's actually kind of a really vibrant community here. And it's caused people to join that hadn't thought about joining before. So we've done some surveys around the country and found that, in every state, there's been an increase in membership. And the organizations are finding a new means of actually surviving. We've also discovered that there's no significant decline in paper sales in any state. Now, that's a big fear here that, nobody will buy paper. They won't give us tips. And paper's cheaper, and we're going to decline and it's going to be a problem. But I'll show you a chart later on that there really has been no significant decline in paper sales. They're very compatible products, and you don't have enough machines listed in this bill that would cause people to be able to move very quickly from paper. There may be a maximum of 10. The average is, even if the law says you can have 10, the average is, you know, maybe 6 or 7. A lot of places don't even put in 10. And so if people are playing those machines, That's only 7 or 10 people who can actually play at one time. Everybody else, what do? They play paper tickets. And they wait around. And some people simply enjoy paper, and they will just continue to play with the paper tickets, and they won't even bother to try the electronics, which is not a problem for the charity, because the charity has no upfront costs with this. So if a charity, let's say a veterans club, decides to put in 5 machines, let's say nobody plays them, the charity doesn't make any money, but the charity doesn't lose any money either, because they have no cost up front that they have to cover. So there's really no risk to the charity here. It's all upside. If people do play them and if people do like them, the charity is going to make money. There will be competitive pricing. There's been a lot of concern about, oh, the manufacturers take way too much money for these machines, and they're going to take 50%. Not true. Right now, there's one distributor who's come out and said that he will charge 33% of the adjusted gross, which is pretty comparable around the country. 35% is probably the average. He's going to charge 33%. I actually think this is going to be more like a 30%, which means the difference in what that means in terms of price comparisons with paper. Paper games cost 20%. These will cost about 30%. In other words, paper games cost 2 cents per dollar per ticket. 2 cents, these will cost 3 cents. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is the charity's getting all the equipment up front at no cost. All service is included. If anything goes wrong, it gets fixed. New games are provided on a regular basis, and those games cost between $200,000 and $300,000 a piece to develop. So they're not cheap. And the charity gets 24/7 customer service in the event they have a question. You'd be surprised how many people lose their passwords every day or things like that. But there's 24/7 service in the event they do lose their password, then they can get access to that information. So while the price is a little bit higher, the product comes with a lot more benefits to justify that additional price. Whereas the paper game, it simply comes with a box of tickets. But the charity then is responsible for selling those tickets. If they don't sell all the tickets, they don't make the money. On an electronic game, if they don't sell all the tickets, they don't pay for the tickets. They only pay for what they sell. So there's never a what they call the unplayed ticket penalty for not selling all the tickets. The electronics also increase accountability. In that, I said there's robust back-end reporting. You can monitor the play much simpler than you can monitor the play with paper games. It's also impossible for a seller, not saying that this ever happens, but it's impossible for a seller to suggest that one game might be better than others because there may be more tickets or less winners that have come out. You don't know on the electronic game. You have no idea. There's a rule in Alaska that says that if people are related to each other, if you're related to a seller, you cannot buy tickets from that seller. Well, there are a lot of places in rural Alaska where everybody's kind of related to everybody else, and that poses a problem. With these games, it doesn't matter because you don't know what's in the game. You can't provide any kind of beneficial information to anybody if it's on the electronic format. And as I said, it also enhances regulatory oversight because it would give the Department of Revenue the ability to receive reports electronically as well as be able to go into the devices directly through an online portal system that we provide for them. So let me try to just go through this really quickly in the interest of time. The bill does not make electronic pull tabs mandatory. They're optional. If people don't think they'll work for them, they don't have to play them. If the operators don't think they can make money, they don't have to take them. It's an optional, additional, modern form of the pull tab game that people can choose to take or not. But the bill only offers an option for people who truly do want to take advantage of that option. As I said, paper pull tabs will not go away. Bingo, as we know it, will not be destroyed. Bingo took a hard hit during the COVID pandemic. But in most states, it's crawling back up. Electronic pull tabs have not destroyed bingo any more than electronic bingo, which has been legal in Alaska for several years now, has destroyed bingo. In fact, it's increased bingo revenue. As I said, no upfront investment. It's just pull tabs in a modern format. This bill does not change the current regulatory structure. The maximum dollar you can spend on a ticket is $2. Maximum prize is $500. None of that changes. There's no increase in what people can spend per ticket, nor is there any increase in what they can win. Here's a few charts, and I'll go through these really pretty quickly. As I already said, the average increase is 74%, but you can see from the states of Ohio, North Dakota, Minnesota, Kentucky, and New Hampshire, the blue line represents the last year of paper only, where no electronics were available. The orange line represents electronics. The orange line represents the most recent year of paper sales. And then the gray line represents the electronics. So you can see North Dakota had a little dip. That was from 2022. They're actually up in 2023, but we don't have the exact number yet, so I can't quite update the draft. But every place else has stayed relatively flat, and or you've seen paper sales increase along with the adoption of electronic pull tabs. Both in Minnesota and Ohio in particular, there was a huge growth in paper pull tabs along with electronic pull tabs. And these are numbers, by the way, directly from state agencies. So there's not numbers that we've dreamed up ourselves, but they've come directly from the states. You can see in Ohio, the net receipts for charities went up. The orange represents the increase. So we're looking at around $200 million to about $375 million when electronics were brought in 2022 to the present time. Minnesota was a huge increase. Minnesota, where I'm from, by the way, has more pull tab sales than any place else in the country. And as electronic pull tabs came in, you can see there was a dip in 2020 that was pandemic related, but electronic pull tabs have continued to grow and paper pull tabs grew along with it. They've kind of flattened out now a little bit, but a massive increase in revenue to the charities. North Dakota, the same thing, flat paper sales along with tremendous growth in electronic sales. Kentucky, significant growth in electronic sales.
Mary, Senator Dunbar has a question.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for this presentation. Can we go back to the North Dakota?
Sure.
And I choose North Dakota just because it's, of these states, the one that's closest in population to us. Although I assume that there must be something driving this number, some kind of tourist industry or something. What I'm getting at is, so it goes back to what the chair's question was about the sort of numbers and the increased gambling activity. Gaming activity. So this is $200 million net, a little over $200 million net receipt, correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Dunbar.
How much gaming activity does it take to generate $200 million in net receipts? Does that mean the people of North Dakota gambled or, you know, gamed $500 million, $1 billion? Like, it's a net. So what's the gross?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, probably about $1 billion.
About $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So about $1 billion of economic activity.
Yep.
North Dakota, I'm trying to remember what their population is. It's larger than ours, I think, but not much.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, 770,000 people.
Great. So it's about $50,000 people more than us. Do you think our industry will be of approximate size?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, it's hard to predict, but let me try to explain that gross receipt number because it can be kind of misleading. So let's say, for instance, I have $20 to spend on gaming on a night, and I could buy paper pull tabs or I could buy electronic pull tabs. Now, in North Dakota, the payout on paper pull tabs is around 80% of win to the charities. It's about 92% on the payback on the electronic machines. So what that means is if I take my $20, I'm going to win some of that time. Over the course of the game, I would win 90% of the time. But it depends how many tickets I buy. But likely, at a 90% payback, I'm still going to win. Now, let's assume I win $50, and I decide I'm going to play that back. Okay, now I've just spent $70. Well, now I just won another $20. I'm going to play that back. Now I've just spent $90. Then I won $5 or $10, and I play that back. And on it goes. At the end of the night, I may come home with nothing. I may come home with prize money. You know, I might come home with cash in my pocket. But at the end of the day, I still only spent $20 of my original dollar. I didn't go dig deeper into my pocket. I still spent that $20. And the rest of the money was money that I chose to, you know, put back into the game, or I decided to put it in my pocket and go home. But that gross, as you can see, that gross receipts number includes all those playbacks. And so it can be, it's economic activity, but it's a little bit exaggerated.
So does that mean that this 8% here, the 8% you described, so 92% payback to the player, so 8% captured by the operator or whichever, the person selling the item, is that 8% equal to this almost $200 million here? You know, remove the blue bar, which is 20% payout. Are you saying that this orange representation here, it's about $200 million, is that 8%, or is that 8% minus some other kinds of cost to get to a net number?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, that number there would be that 8%.
Okay. So it's got to be much more than $1 billion then. I mean, just mathematically,
well,
$200 million. It's got to be, you know, more than $2 billion. But your point is that it's $2 billion cycling, but about $200 million basically extracted from the players. I mean, that's what's happening, right? I mean, there's money is flowing from one player to another. You're kind of agnostic as to who gets it, but ultimately, 8% is captured by the folks that are running the game. And that's equal to about $200 million. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, if you're talking about 92% versus, I mean, it's probably, that's kind of a high market.
Yeah.
Most places are not much higher than 90%, and okay, some are lower at like 85%. So depending on the payback.
Yeah.
And that could be a representative of a number of different paybacks as well. So 92 might be slightly high. But your analysis is correct, with just a caution that the numbers could vary depending on whether that's 8%, 10%, or 15%.
Yeah. So I guess I just want to make sure we're still that number there. So it's NDPT net receipt growth. So is that pull tab net receipt growth? So that's not the additional money for the charity. That's the additional total money, and then the charity's got a percentage of that. Is that right?
Senator Dunbar, it is the amount of money that the charity retains after all prizes are paid. So in a charitable situation where the charity is doing the gambling.
Right. But the charity isn't the only one getting paid, right? The government's going to take a tax. The owners are going to take some net profit. So what I'm saying is that the sort of total pot, and then the charity gets a percentage of that, or is that just what the charity's got and there's some additional money that the government or whomever else received?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, that's what's left over. And then out of that $200 million, then taxes have to be paid. And expenses have to be paid. Okay. And at the end of the day, what the charity gets in terms of profit, uh-huh, is that net minus expenses is the profit.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I'm a little confused.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Earlier, I heard when I asked the question that the charities get 100% of that proceeds, which means after gross, all the expenses, whatever's left over is net, and that's what they get. So now I'm confused because I hear you saying something differently, unless I'm just not understanding. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gray Jackson, this chart, and net can be referred to differently, but if we refer to net receipts, for example, as what is left after all prizes are paid, we'll say that's net receipts. Out of that, then the charity or the permittees have to pay their expenses, which means they have to pay their 3% tax to the state. They have to pay for their cost of their games. They have to pay for any employees that they might use in order to do the reporting, the record keeping, the accounting, those types of things. So after the expenses are paid, you're left with what's commonly referred to as like a net profit or the profit. And that's what the charity gets. Now, if the charity has very few expenses and they work with volunteers, they don't have to pay people, they do their own accounting, that profit is going to be much higher. And it's in their best interest to control those expenses, and they generally try to do so. But they do have expenses off of that number before they get down to actually what they take and can use for programming for their charitable causes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. In the interest of time, we're going to get to public testimony in a minute. We got there. You guys understood, I think, what's happening here. The important information for me, and I think the rest of the committee, is we want to know how the pie is divided from previous RIPPIs to what this bill proposes. So I want the division of the pie for your company, operators, distributors, and nonprofits to look the same, or maybe even more money go to nonprofits if we're going to be taking more money out of our economy to be spent on paper pull tabs, to be spent on a tablet, or to be spent on the cabinet, what also might otherwise be known as a slot machine. So I want to know that the pie is divided up the same way or even more beneficially to nonprofits if we're going to go forward with this. But thank you for your presentation today.
Oh, wait, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you were doing.
We're out of time.
Can we just get to the last? Can we do the last slide? Because it's the one, the Alaska slide. Can you just go to that,
sure,
please? Okay. So 40% increase, $45 million. Why do you think it's going to look like this and not like North Dakota? That is, North Dakota saw a tremendous increase in gambling activity. I mean, almost 10 times, it looks like, almost as much gambling activity. Why do you think that the switch to these electronic games won't have a similarly large impact on our gaming market?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunbar, first of all, this chart represents the profit. That this is the currently Alaska Charities profit is about $46 million. That's after all expenses.
Right.
So this is simply a projection of if that net increases and if the charities have to take out expenses, what is that number going to look like? So we're comparing a little bit apples to oranges here. The chart for North Dakota was the gross less prizes.
Yeah.
No expenses taken out. This takes out the expenses. So it's going to show that less amount, but it's a conservative projection of roughly about a 40% increase, which is pretty average across the country as to once you take out the expenses, what's left, and it's around 40%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We're going to move now to public testimony, open public testimony on Senate Bill 219. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Please come forward, state your name. Perfect.
My name is Mac Miners.
Mr. Miners, welcome to Senate.
I have been involved in gaming for many years.
You have 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll make it fast. Let's clear up a few things. Percentages.
The vendor gets 70%, and that goes to him. The operator gets 30%, 100% for fraternal organizations. To play a good game, you have to have a percentage that makes it viable to play. So if you play a bunch of 10% games, you'll never make any money and you'll burn your charity up. You've got to at least average 22.5% to 24% to make money. So that means Pull Tabs is a visual game. So you see the money on the wall and you try to get it. You only give them a few give me games, right? 16%ers. She's saying she wants to play 10% to 15%. Going to burn up the permits and no problem. What I see is that if you increase the cap, you decrease the cap to 15,000 tickets per game. We play 20s and 30s. If you want to play a 50-cent game, you're going to have to play 40,000 tickets to make it pay at a small percentage, and it takes forever to pay. I agree with the increase in the prize limitations, because when you increase the operator's prize limitation, that's more money for the charity. Senator Dunbar is right. It's awful easy to see a pie graph. When you look at that pie, you can tell. When you're talking about gross revenue versus net, it takes the gross. And when you have playbacks, most of the games, you can take it really simple and go, if she's playing 15% times 15% by the gross, there's your net. Really simple to figure out. It doesn't take a rocket science to figure this stuff out. I think you got to address the percentage that the manufacturer is going to take with the machines. I think you got to bring it down to an equal field of 20. If you're going to play Pull Tabs at 20% for the state, you should play 20% for these guys.
Mr. Miners.
I'm at the two.
You are.
I wish I could.
Thank you.
Carry on.
Thank you for participating today. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Please come forward. Put yourself on the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Krista Foley. I am a representative of multiple military organizations. I am the department commander for AMVETS Alaska. I am my programs coordinator for my post, which is where we hand out our charity money. I'm also a member of the American Legion, the VFW, as well as the Eagles and the Moose. I'm all about giving back to my community, veterans helping veterans. At this time, I'd like to express my strong support of this bill. I've had multiple conversations with some of our sister organizations outside of the state that have already started doing this. And all I get back from them is how much their profits have increased that they give to their charities, that they physically give to their charities. All of our veterans are volunteers. We don't take anything. So everything we get, everything we earn, all of our, I won't say all of our, but 98% of our charitable donations and funding that we give back to Honor Flight, the Fisher House, JROTC, multiple other things and organizations within our community. We get it from this, and we're all volunteers. I'm not trying to take away from operators or anything like that, but I watched the change from paper bingo to electronic bingo. I can tell you, I have adult children, and they don't care about bingo, and they don't care about paper pull tabs, but they'll go to Vegas and play the machines. I'd like to keep that money here in our state for our veterans and for our charities. We have multiple charities. The Veterans Museum downtown, they're always looking for donations. These are just a few of the things. I'm here today on behalf of my district and my department. I got a call just before I came here to say, please endorse this bill for us. $10,000 more to our charity is $10,000 that we're not giving now.
You're at your 2 minutes, ma'am.
I thank you for your time, and I thank this committee for their time and their consideration. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the room else wishing to testify? Seeing no one, we'll go online to David Sandin. Please put your name on the record, state your location, and you have 2 minutes.
Hello, David Sandin here. I represent Hidden Treasures Multiple Beneficiary Permit. My testimony will go over 2 minutes, so I'm going to chop it up. I sent this all to you guys last night into the committee as well. I'll just go to some highlights here pretty quick. This committee should be aware that any increase in the maximum yearly prize allowance that this bill will authorize, if adopted, will directly result in fewer, not more, nonprofits receiving money from charitable gaming. This legislation will limit the participation in the marketplace and will certainly decrease the number of nonprofit organizations receiving funds through charitable gaming, regardless of how they're organized. Under this legislation, over a brief period, all full-tab sales in Alaska will most likely be exclusively controlled by the manufacturers, distributors, and electronic full-tab systems. It's the nature of the beast. Look at those charts that we put up. At the expense of eligible nonprofit entities' ability to enter the marketplace or competitively remain in this marketplace. Please do not move this legislation out of your committee. It is possible to amend this legislation in such a way as to allow open and competitive marketplace, but to do so, your committee would undoubtedly have to take a look at the entirety of your charitable gaming statute. If you were to do so, we would suggest the following. Increase the mandated return to the charities. They're currently required to get 30% of this net. They should be getting 35% of the net. Make that a law. Everyone likes to talk the talk about how it's all about the charities, but I see no one advocating to mandate by law an increase in their return. Increase the state of Alaska's pay. Currently it's 3%. You should raise that to 8%. Yes, the state of Alaska should receive more funds from gambling activity. This concept should have and nearly did become law back in the 23rd legislative session via Senate Bill 102 back in 2023. Please check that record out or have your staff do so. Third thing would be disallow any local government gross sales taxation on pull tabs and instead split this new 8% ideal net tax for the state in some proportional way with the local government jurisdictions where that money or those monies are generated or the pull tabs are sold.
Mr. Sandin, your 2 minutes have expired.
And then number four, I would put a cap on electronic toll tabs at 15%. And then number five, I'd raise the prize individual ticket for $500,000.
We're going next to Tim Navar. Mr. Navar, please state your name for the record and your location, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Tim Navar, Kenai, Alaska. I represent myself, although I sit on a number of nonprofits, but I'm not a person in charge of gaming or anything. I have been in the past, but I, sorry, I'm trying to get rid of a call coming in at the same time I'm talking. I want to speak against the bill or that it not move out of committee. I think it needs a lot more work. I think even the discussion of manufacturers and distributor being allowed, and even when they buy a distributor, they now can push out the other distributors in the state and make a monopoly. So there's things that can happen that aren't seen even under the current law. But I would only ask that nonprofits, I liked what you said, Mr. Chairman, when you asked for a pie chart, if you get a pie chart of the same amount of money that's being raised right now, and let's pretend, I know you can still have paper, but let's pretend it was all electronic and look at the pie chart, and I think you would see that everybody loses except for the manufacturers and the others. Now, we do got to go to some kind of new method at some point, but let's take our time and do it right and not hurt the nonprofits. I work with a lot, I volunteer a lot, I give money to a lot, and I care about what happens in Alaska, and nonprofits do a tremendous job in our communities across the state, and it can't be replicated by state services or anything else. And so this is a bill that was given to us back in the 60s and 80s to raise money for nonprofits. They need to have more say and more involvement and more understanding before you pass something out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going next to Steve Nerland. Mr. Nerland, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, Steve Nerland, Anchorage, Alaska. I'm with the Alliance for American Legion Baseball. I'm not here to speak for or against this bill, but ask the committee to consider some issues, particularly in terms of the permittees. These are not the operators. These are not the fraternal organizations. These are the permittees who really have not so much to do with the gaming itself other than the sources of income. And what I would say is, having served on number of committees and organizations that have been permittees, certainty is the most important thing for gaming income. Most entities will identify the monies that come in as a permittee from the operator as additional found money to perform services or to help their organizations. There are some that budget for it, but very few do, mainly because it is not certain what the amount will be. So if you consider the permittee, the nonprofits, please consider that that's really important. We've had 40 years of gaming and monies to those nonprofits. I'd like to also ask you to consider that. And it also concerns me a little bit, at least the comments that were made, that this potentially could have fewer nonprofits involved in permittees as being a permittee and receiving those money. So that's the main thing that I would say after listening to this testimony is please give it due consideration. I think the future will include e-tabs, but I'd like to be sure that in the legislation, all of those concerns are addressed. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Erland. Up next is Michelle Sass. Ms. Sass, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Michelle Sass. I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. I represent myself in my comments here today to the committee. Thank you for having me. I am on the board of a small nonprofit American Legion auxiliary unit. And what I see from the information that I've been able to gather is that the reality is the operators and the people who produce these games, et cetera, they make a lion's share of this money. But our small unit benefits from being a permittee, and we would benefit additionally to have these electronic games because I feel it would open up more people utilizing those, but not taking away from the paper pull tab. And the focus is for the charities because this is the largest share of money that we are able to generate on an annual basis comes from these types of games. So any increase in that amount of money helps us contribute it back to our communities, back to our mission, back to our veterans. And that is what entices us with this bill. Tweaks are great. I think that getting it right the first time is a great way to go with it, but I cannot see a downside to increasing the income that we can get from these charitable games. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Up next is Angel Whitney. Ms. Whitney, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Angel Whitney. Address the chair and the members of the committee. I am from Anchorage, Alaska. I represent myself and a small organization, American Legion Unit. And I would like to address the fact that I believe that those should be advanced. Our nonprofits, I believe, will thrive. And in turn, we let us contribute more back to our community and the aspects of it assist our veterans, their families, the schools, and it will let us give back more to the community. It attracts the younger demographics. Like a lot of these, it won't push away for the paper, but it will bring in more, not so young, like underage, but a younger group playing with electronic gaming. It's being the administration being with the electronic bills that it's reliable. I believe it'll increase the profits and the community engagement. The charitable fundraising, I believe it will guarantee to go up. It would, our small organization and we donate and, to the community a lot, to many different organizations. And I just believe that it would be a helpful insight for all of us and a profit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next is Sandy Powers. Please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Sandy Powers. I'm the president of the Alaska Charitable Gaming Alliance, and I also own Big Valley Bingo in Wasilla. I currently raise money for over 25 charities, and I employ over 25 people. And I have made, my main concerns with this are twofold. I've never fully been able to get the pie graph or the cost of this. I'm a business owner, and it's always ranging 35, 30%, 4 cents a ticket. I understand that there's some competition in distributors, but I can't get a cost comparison of e-tabs versus, paper. And, my other concerns are for the addictive nature of these machines. Currently, Alaska ranks 47th in gambling addiction. It's one of the few vices that we are not in the top 10. And many of the other states that have these are in the top 25. North Dakota is ranked, I believe, 13th in gambling addiction. And I really just don't want to, I'm a business owner in this industry, and we just don't see it as a problem now. And I'm not certain that this bill, having the consoles and the tablets, is going to prevent us from having more gambling problems. I spoke with Deb McDaniel.
Ms. Powers, your 2 minutes has expired.
Oh, sorry. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. At this time, I will hold public testimony open on Senate Bill 146. Is there any further committee discussion? We're going to move on. Let's take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record at 2:50 in Senate Labor and Commerce, we have set Senate Bill 146 aside and are now taking up Senate Bill 219, prior authorization exemption for health providers. We have before us the Honorable Senator David Wilson and his staff, Julia Fanoz, to present the bill. Senator, Ms. Fanoz, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the Labor and Commerce Committee members. For the record, I'm Senator David Wilson, Senator for District N, and with me today is Ms. Funoff.
Through the chair, for the record, Julia Funoff, staff to Senator Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 219 aims to reduce the wait time for Alaskans to access health care services by exempting pre-authorization requirements for qualified health care providers. Alaskans currently await days and weeks in the processing time before healthcare provider insurance companies for pre-authorizations, denying critical healthcare services. With this bill, a healthcare provider that has had an 80% or more prior authorization request approved by certain healthcare services in the most recent 12-month period can be exempted from pre-authorization requirements. This exemption is granted to healthcare providers who have had a proven track record for these type of authorization requests, ensuring only reliable providers are exempted, Mr. Chairman. These exempted providers will receive a list of services which they can bypass pre-authorizations during the duration of their exemption, ensuring timely care delivery. States with similar exemptions have seen an increased frequency of patients receiving necessary healthcare services without these unnecessary delays. And Senate Bill 219, designed to ensure healthcare Alaskans have access to the fast, efficient, quality healthcare services that they need most without the wait time of pre-authorizations and deny even more coverage. Mr. Chair, normally healthcare services for pre-authorizations are done normally by the healthcare providers, but in certain circumstances, which is additional delays for people who have complex healthcare needs, people with mixed tissue disease, people with cancer patients, complex health folks, that onus is really on the patient. A lot of healthcare providers take that onus on to help those patients along, but I have known patients in my district who have suffered months trying to get authorization services, and because we don't really have an integrated system of care here in Alaska, and it's been difficult for those people who have complex health issues to get the help that they need. Other states have also passed similar programs. Michigan, Texas, Vermont, Louisiana, West Virginia, and other states are currently looking to this type of reform are New Jersey, Arkansas, and Montana, Rhode Island, Washington State, and Tennessee. So we will not be the first. This is not something that's pioneering, but we are leading the leading trend on this type of legislation. And Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, we're told by Mr. Committee Aide that it might be wise to maybe forego the sexual analysis, so allow folks to testify that have come far and near to do that. If that's the will of the committee.
Absolutely. Okay. We would love to invite Director of the Division of Insurance, Lori Wing Heyer. Unless there are questions for the bill sponsor. Seeing none. Madam Director. Questions? Oh. I have no questions at this time. Thank you. Very good. Pam Ventgen. Is she your invited testifier?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Ms. Ventgen, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Bjorkman. My name is Pam Benson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Medical Association. We represent physicians and physician assistants across the state. We support Senate Bill 219 and encourage your passage of this bill. Prior authorization is a cost control process that requires healthcare professionals to obtain advance approval from health insurance plans before a prescription medication or a medical service qualifies for payment and can be delivered to the patient. These are time-consuming barriers to effective delivery of necessary treatment. This is especially burdensome for providers who routinely, as Senator Wilson said, over 80% of the time or more, eventually get their prior authorizations approved. Prior authorization requirements delay treatment and necessary care 94% of the time. Up to 80% of patients abandon recommended care at least some of the time. 33% of physicians report that prior authorization has led to serious adverse events for the patients in their care. 89% of physicians report that prior authorization has a negative impact on patient care. 62% of physicians report prior authorization has led to additional office visits and emergency department visits. Insurance companies will tell you that their panel of reviewers is well qualified. In reality, physicians report having to get prior approval from nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and retired physicians. These are not physicians well versed in current standards of care. Local oncologists tell me that it takes multiple phone calls to finally get a physician reviewer, a peer-to-peer reviewer, who they must then educate in the type and stage of cancer and the current best practices for treating such a cancer before finally getting approval. Another oncologist told me of a patient who wanted care from their practice because they were the best in the state in that particular type of cancer, but they were out of network. The patient was faced with paying $40,000 out of pocket before they could see the physician of their choice. SB 219, if passed, will go a long way to alleviate the burden on providers. It will increase the quality of care to patients and ultimately reduce the cost of unnecessary office and emergency department visits prior to authorization for their therapy requirements. I'm happy to answer any questions, but thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Are there questions from members of the committee? Ms. Vetkin, I have a question. Would it surprise you to hear that some providers in my community often get denials in a matter of minutes when they submit prior authorization claims?
Yes, it is routine that insurance companies initially deny these requests, and that initiates the appeal process, which involves multiple phone calls, waits on the phone. Physician offices, physician practices have to hire additional personnel to work these prior authorizations, and it takes hours and hours per week in most physician practices.
And in your professional opinion, is it possible for an experienced professional medical team to evaluate most prior authorizations in a matter of minutes?
Yes, if they were experienced in the particular specialty area. If they had an oncology team, for example, that were up to date on oncology practices, that would be far different than a physician who maybe was an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and now they're looking at a state-of-the-art treatment for breast cancer. That's not in their area of expertise.
To be clear, providers report to me that upon submitting prior authorization requests and hitting the send button, that they get denials back in less than 5 minutes. And, many of them report that insurance companies are using artificial intelligence and other means to deny these claims, and that no actual person is actually looking at these items, but we'll explore that more.
I don't know that, but I would not be surprised. If the prior approval is denied, then some of those will not go on to appeal. Those that do go on to appeal, they are delayed and delayed and delayed. Ultimately, a significant number do get approved, and that's what this bill is meant to address. Those physicians who ultimately get approved for 80% or more of their prior authorization requests would then be exempted from repeating this process for a period of time. That could be reevaluated on an annual basis or whatever, but at least it would alleviate the delays in care at the initial point.
Thank you very much. Up next, Jeannie Monk.
Good afternoon. Is this on? Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Jeannie Monk, and I'm here representing the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association. I'm here today to express our strong support for SB 219, which aims to reduce the wait time for certain healthcare services by exempting healthcare providers from the pre-authorization process. AHA is committed to the well-being of patients and the efficient operation of hospitals. We believe this bill represents a significant step forward in ensuring timely access to essential medical care while also reducing the burdensome administrative requirements. I could spend my whole time talking about the burden prior authorization places on providers, but first I want to talk about the patient perspective. This bill directly impacts the health and well-being of patients. The authorization process can be incredibly frustrating and stressful for patients. When a healthcare provider determines that a certain treatment or procedure is medically necessary, the last thing a patient wants is to have to worry about whether the insurance company will approve it in a timely manner. Yet all too often, patients face unnecessary delays and obstacles in obtaining the care they need due to the burdensome authorization requirements. This can apply to a variety of things like surgery, diagnostic testing, or medications. For patients in rural areas, this can present an even greater challenge. Arranging time off work, transportation, and childcare to receive medical care is already a challenging obstacle for many people. But adding in the uncertainty of when the insurance company will approve the procedure makes it even more difficult to plan, especially when travel is involved. Patients may need to repeatedly call to find out if they can schedule their treatment. They may make travel plans and even leave their community, only to find out that the initial authorization request has been denied and the provider must appeal. While this process was intended to prevent unnecessary procedures, prior authorization has also become a tool to delay and deny necessary medical treatment and avoid paying for services altogether. The prior authorization process is extremely time-consuming for hospitals and medical practices. They are required to have teams of staff navigate administrative hurdles to secure approval before they can deliver the necessary care. Everyone is frustrated by the obstacles the process creates to receiving necessary care. SB 219 recognizes the validity of the prior authorization process while also limiting unnecessary time-consuming hurdles. Providers with a proven track record of responsible practice can be exempt from the requirement for specific services. This would streamline care delivery process, allow providers to focus on what matters most, providing patients with the treatment they need when they need it. We believe this bill strikes a good balance between ensuring responsible healthcare practices and reducing administrative burden. We thank you for your consideration of this important legislation that will support both patients and their providers.
Thank you very much, Ms. Monk. Are there questions from members of the committee? Very good. Senator Wilson, did you have any other invited testifiers? I apologize to folks who had been waiting to provide public testimony on this item. Our committee is out of time for today. But we'll open public testimony at our next meeting. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if I could ask two quick questions of the sponsor.
You may.
Just so that, not expecting you to answer today, but before our next hearing. My first is, just because we've run up against this in another bill before this committee, does this, what are the ERISA impacts? That is to say, does this have any impact? I'm getting a no from the director of insurance. That's a good sign for you. So I just want to have something in writing for the next, or some indication of that for the explanation of why it doesn't by the next time we hear this. And I think it's great if it doesn't. And the other thing is, is there any worry, and again, this is for next hearing, that, you know, it's healthcare providers with, you know, proven track records will have this ability. Is there any worry this will sort of prevent new healthcare providers from entering into our market because they'll be at a competitive disadvantage for sort of established players because they won't be able to offer this to, you know, to patients? So again, I don't need an answer today, just to think of something I'm thinking about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Dunbar the second, yes, we'll work with the director of insurance to get you why it doesn't. And no, it would not impact new players to market, because even the existing players will still have to renew every 12 months. So as long as the first year, yes, they would have the authorization status just like everyone else would. And then after that, everyone's on an equal playing field.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Seeing none, we will set Senate Bill 219 aside for further consideration. Thank you very much, Senator Wilson. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Friday, the Ides of March 15th, when we will hear three bills. Senate Bill 44, Naturopaths, Licensing Practices. Senate Bill 225, Occupational Licensing Fees. And Senate Bill 237, Tax Credit, Child Care, Utility, House/Food. As there's no further business before this committee, today we are adjourned at 3:07 p.m.